Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Workers' rights advance in California. Rideshare workers win in Seattle. Latest jobless numbers out. And today on the show, the Alliance for American Manufacturing and the corporate culprits getting COVID cash. Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, October 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And when you get a chance, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. That would be very much appreciated. We're also on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and that's also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. We have two guests on the show today. Scott Paul will be rejoining us. We've had him on the show a number of times in the last 6 to 8 months. He heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Great website. Check it out, AmericanManufacturing.org. Lots of good news in there, and they've been pushing to get more jobs located in America. Reshoring is the term. And three things he's going to get into. Number one, the presidential debate from last Tuesday. And Scott is pretty upset because the debate barely bothered to touch on the topic of China. All the jobs that have gone to China, why weren't they zeroing in on that? Make them made in America. That's what it's all about. And he's got some numbers on the factory jobs. Manufacturing did gain 66,000 jobs in September. This is according to the job numbers that came out on Friday. And I'll get more specific on those in a minute. That may sound like good news. Yeah, 66,000 jobs. But here's the problem. There's 647,000 factory workers still out of a job. Yeah. So that's what, maybe 10%? What about the other 90% here? So Scott will get into that and talk about the push for American-made rail cars. This is an issue that's been going on. The other story, too, and this is real interesting. There's a couple of stories posted on his website about the decline of rare earth materials. Rare earth materials are critical components in a number of military uses, especially advanced technology. They're also used in clean energy technology, like for wind, solar, geothermal power, electric vehicles. And the World Bank estimates that the production of minerals like graphite, lithium, and cobalt could increase by nearly 500% in the next 30 years. And guess what? The United States remains almost entirely dependent on China for rare earth minerals. Everything's going to China. So we'll cover all of this with Scott Paul as our first guest on the show. Our second guest on the show is Greg LeRoy. Greg is no stranger to the show. He's been on many, many times. He started an organization called Good Jobs First. The website is goodjobsfirst.org. They've been around for well over 20 years. What they do essentially is track money, and they also are very, very vigilant on corporations that use tax money to relocate into another state or another municipality. Well, he's out with another report here that'll take your breath away. More than 43,000 businesses and nonprofit organizations that receive CARES Act funds, you know, the money that came out in March, these businesses have a history of misconduct, and Greg reports they collectively have paid out $13 billion, $13 billion, to settle civil and criminal penalties over the last 10 years. Together, the same companies received $57 billion in grants, $91 billion in loans through the federal stimulus bill passed in Congress. Among the violations, workplace safety issues, leading in one case to the death of a worker, flouting of environmental standards, wage theft, and even defrauding the federal government. Let me just run down a couple here. Over 6,000 healthcare providers received $85 billion in grants and loans despite having paid $9 billion in penalties, mostly related to defrauding Medicare and Medicaid. 38,000 small businesses received $37 billion in loans, though they have paid penalties of $3 billion. You know what for? Wage theft. Some of them jeopardizing worker and health safety. We have colleges and universities here. 147 of them received $503 million in grants, paid $900 million in penalties, mostly for-profit institutions that have used deceptive marketing practices to attract students and then load them up with debt. And 32 aviation sector companies receiving $25 billion in grants and loans despite having paid $600 million in penalties related to worker safety. I could go on. Unbelievable. This is our money. This is our money. Going up in smoke, pretty much. So Greg LeRoy will be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. More on those jobless numbers. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported 661,000 non-farm jobs were added in September, thus lowering the unemployment rate to 7.1%. Now, roughly half of those jobs were in the leisure and hospitality sector. So that area is coming back, but they're not what you call high-wage jobs. Though the economic recovery has exceeded some expectations from economists, many note that the number of jobs added actually decreased from month to month. And the trend points to a larger problem of an economic slowdown that many economists say cannot be properly fixed without congressional intervention. Now, on Thursday, the House approved new legislation that would provide $2.2 trillion in pandemic-related aid. The aid would go toward increasing weekly unemployment benefits, as well as assisting those sectors that have most been affected by the economic showdown. But here we are again, and it's not going anywhere. Actors' Equity, which represents many performers at Disney theme parks, issued a statement about the company's decision last week to lay off 28,000 of its workers. A bill that could provide these laid-off employees with unemployment insurance and a pathway to affordable health care has been sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk for months. A comment from Mary McCroll, executive director of Actors Equity. In Florida, laid-off Disney workers can only receive $275 in unemployment benefits, which is unconscionable. She went on to say the Senate must help these workers. The union said it remains in contact with management at Disney and will enforce the collective bargaining agreement and relevant laws to protect its members who are impacted by the layoffs. I want to give you the toll-free number to call your senators, although some of them are quarantined right now. Whether this is going to happen, I don't know, but the pressure needs to stay focused on this issue. 866-832-1560. That's the number the AFL-CIO has put up. 866-832-1560. Last week marked an eventful occasion for workers' rights advocates in Sacramento as Governor Gavin Newsom moved on a number of major employment rights bills. Among the measures, he signed legislation to require businesses of over 100 employees to track and report employee compensation based on race and gender. The new law, SB 973, goes into effect in March. He also approved a measure supported by the state's largest healthcare workers union, SEIU, United Healthcare Workers West, which will mandate that hospitals stockpile at least 45 days worth of personal protective equipment, or get this, they face a fine of up to $25,000. Meanwhile, Seattle became the nation's second city to pass a minimum wage ordinance for rideshare drivers. The measure, approved unanimously by the city council, seeks to set a minimum $16 net minimum wage for drivers through a combination of minimum payment rates measured per mile and per minute. In the meantime, in Lynn, Massachusetts, city officials moved to amend the city's wage theft ordinance, closing a loophole that had allowed developers in the city to collect local tax breaks without requiring their building contractors to disclose previous labor and wage theft violations. How about that? City's actions come in response to the recent revelation that one of the largest developers in Lynn, Massachusetts, had been using a loophole to employ chronic wage violators on some of the projects without any oversight. So it's good to see that the city officials there have clamped down on that. All right, we have to break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment with the Alliance for American Manufacturing coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast. All right, let's go to line number one. Love having this guy on. Scott Paul is his name. He heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing. I like that. American Manufacturing. That's what it's all about. Website is AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott Paul, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Hey, Flash. It's great to be with you.
All right. Saw your release on Friday right after the jobless report came out about factory jobs. Let's start there because it sounded good. What was it? 66,000 factory jobs were added, but we got a long way to go, don't we, Scott?
Yeah, I think the good news and the only good news is that we're adding some manufacturing jobs rather than subtracting them. But we dug a big hole at the beginning of the year, the pandemic and the economic collapse. And we're not even close to being out of it. In fact, we are still about 650,000 manufacturing jobs in the hole from when the pandemic started. And that's fully 5-6% of manufacturing employment. And the unfortunate thing, Flash, that we're seeing is that it's looking like a lot of those layoffs may in fact be long-term or permanent. And that's obviously concerning. because we really can't afford to see any more shrinkage in the domestic manufacturing sector. It was already very fragile.
Yeah. You know what this really reflected on in America is our supply chain. And you and I have had many conversations over the years about the jobs that went to Mexico, that went to China, that went to Vietnam, any place but America. And here we get whacked with this pandemic, and we have to get masks from China. We have to go elsewhere for ventilators. Now, they, in truth be told here, it was good to see that I believe it was the Ford Motor Company that retooled a couple of their plants with the UAW and made those ventilators. But that was just a drop in the bucket. I'm hoping, and I think you're hoping too, that this was a wake-up call to bring those jobs back. I know there's a lot of things going on right now, Scott, but is any of that conversation happening?
Yeah, it is a it's a really important question, and obviously we have this acute need for medical supplies, for vaccine scale-up capabilities, for PPE for our hospital workers and for others and for businesses to be able to get back up and running. And we still depend way more on imports. In fact, imports of kind of what I would call pandemic-related goods have been surging. They've been surging. And we don't have, you know, the CDC estimates that we need 3.5 billion N95 respirators, because you think about the number that nurses would go through and get in a day, because 3.5 billion sounds like a lot, but it's actually what we need to get through a pandemic. In the United States right now, we have the capacity to make not even half of that, not even half. And it's dangerous. And so, you know, I know the, you know, as we're taping this, the president has COVID-19. He's in a place where he's getting good care and that they're well-staffed and well-supplied. But that is not the case in many places around the country where they're having to scramble and reuse. And Flash, I will say there's been a lot of talk about this. I mean, the administration has talked about it. They talked about it in the Congress. But we've only been taking baby steps to try to rebuild some of that capability. And if you look at the some of the other data, you know, the trade deficit for the latest month we have available, August, was a record. It was a record. It was like $82 billion. It was surging with every country. And so we're not becoming more independent. We are becoming more dependent on imports. And that's bad for jobs. That's bad for preparedness. That's bad for security.
Yeah. I take it you watched the debate last Tuesday, and none of this conversation came up, did it?
No, it didn't, Flash. I suffered my way through the debate like millions of other Americans. there was not a lot of talk about preparedness. I mean, Biden mentioned that he had a Made in America manufacturing plan, and then Trump made a claim that he had created 700,000 manufacturing jobs, which is provably false. They were certainly adding some manufacturing jobs from 2017 to 2018, but during his term were more than 200,000 manufacturing jobs in the whole. So that was a provably false statement. But no, they didn't get into this issue in any degree. You know, Biden, when he was laying out his economic plans in July, did talk a great deal about reshoring supply chains and making sure that we use the Defense Production Act to secure more production of PPE. I think that's good. You know, from time to time, Peter Navarro, who is the White House manufacturing and trade advisor, will talk about this, and they have made arrangements with some specific companies. You pointed out Ford Motor Company and ventilators, which was a good thing and a one-off, but on other sorts of supplies, like masks, for instance, we still have a long, long way to go.
Scott, you talk about the Defense Production Act. Why don't you give us some clarity on how that works? Because I guess Trump has used it, but he could have used it more. Can you explain that part for me and our listeners?
Yeah, Flash. There was a, you know, there was this song from a couple decades ago, Too Much, Too Little, Too Late. I don't know if you remember that. I do, but that's kind of what Trump has done with the Defense Production Act. It's a powerful tool that was put into place, in the Truman administration in the lead up to the Korean War to make sure that we were able to rebuild our military to prepare for this. And basically, it gives the federal government can say to private companies, we need to be the first in line, and you need to make these supplies for us. And so in a functioning kind of market, you know, you don't need it in regular times, but in emergencies, you sure do. And Trump has, they've only used it kind of vindictively against companies that they were having a public dispute with. And in many cases, they've used it weeks or months later than they could have to be effective. And they haven't used it broadly for all these different types of PPE that we need. And it's just striking because, as you and I both know, this is a president who hasn't been shy about wanting to wield executive power. In fact, a lot of people would argue he wants to do that too much. But in this case, he's been listening to the Chamber of Commerce. He's been listening to big businesses who have said, we don't want government telling us what to do. When in fact, when you're in the middle of an emergency, you need that kind of direction. And so it's hurt from the supply. You know, we don't have an adequate supply for all of this. It's also hurt in terms of the distribution, in that it's kind of the Wild West for hospitals, for states to figure out where they can get testing kits from or PPEs, and it's just not a very coordinated system at all. And as I mean, we've read all of these stories about hospitals and other facilities that have had shortages, and it shouldn't be happening in our country.
No. Like you mentioned with the N95 mask. All right, Scott, I got to take a quick break. Scott Paul, on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, you can check them out online, AmericanManufacturing.org. Later in the show, Greg LeRoy will be joining us. His organization is Good Jobs First, and he's got some riveting information about all of our taxpayer money going to corporate culprits. That's right. It's all part of America's workforce. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Millions manage their benefits online, so they can do what they want offline. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. You can follow us on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast. And that's our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Scott Paul on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Scott, you and I have been talking in previous shows about these rail cars. And I know your organization has been pushing for American-made rail cars. I mean, we're using taxpayers' dollars to buy rail cars. It should be American-made. Where are we with this? Any progress to report?
Yeah. So, and just to refresh your listeners' memories here, so the transit system in Washington, D.C., which is one of the country's largest, known as the metro system, and for people who have traveled to the Capitol, they know it. They're in the process of procuring new rail cars, and one of the challenges that we've had with them is that when they started this process, they said we are not going to guarantee that these are going to be made in America. There's a Buy America requirement if you're going to get federal money to get your rail cars, but this metro system said we're not going to take federal money specifically for this purpose, even though they get hundreds of millions of dollars from the federal government to help run the system. So they're looking at kind of a what they view as a loophole here. We think it's a violation of the law, and so we wrote to them saying, you should do Buy America for your rail cars. And this is America's transit system, basically. And think of the security implications. I mean, this is a system that carries government officials back and forth to work in normal times. And just the symbolism of having rail cars in our nation's capital being made in a country like China. And that's the real concern. Is that they may procure rail cars that have heavy content from China, if not be made by the state-owned Chinese rail company itself. And so Metro wrote back to us and said, we're not going to necessarily buy these rail cars from America, and just kind of threw it back out there. And so we're on the ready. Metro hasn't made a decision yet. And I know there's a lot of local, state, federal concern about this if Metro decides to proceed. But, it's not only the symbolism, which is obviously somewhat important, but more important than that, and we're talking about this, it's supply chains and capabilities. And if you have one of America's largest rail car systems buying rail cars that are made overseas, that's going to affect jobs all over the supply chain, all over America. And so that's something that we're trying to stop, because we can make these. I mean, there are a lot of companies that can make these rail cars in the United States that would support a supply chain that supports jobs all over this country.
Yeah. I mean, we go back to that lowest bidder stuff, which is just garbage. And a lot of the times you get the lowest bidder products, and next thing you know, they're rusting out. We can cite the, what was it, the bridge out in California? I remember Leo Girard, when he was heading the steelworkers, was talking about that. They didn't even finish the bridge, and it was rusting. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, I do. And if I can share that, because it's just it's an unbelievable story. So when Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator, was the governor in California, he specifically wanted to do a deal with China to have a Chinese state-owned construction company make the steel and fabricated metal for the Bay Bridge, which runs from Oakland to San Francisco. This bridge, as you probably remember, was damaged way back in 1989 by that big earthquake that happened during the World Series. And so California was finally getting around to rebuilding it. And the governor said, "I'm going to source this from California, and we're going to save $250 million because we're going to do this." And as you point out, the quality was terrible. California ended up having to send thousands of its engineers to China to show this company how to make steel and make fabricated metal and do the welding correctly, or somewhat correctly. By the time all was said and done, the bridge was years late because of these problems in China, and it was about $400 million more than they had promised. And there were firms with union workers on the West Coast that said, we can take this on, we can build this, and in fact, it would have built out a capability for other bridges, other big bridges on the West Coast when they needed it. But California squandered that opportunity and instead subsidized a company owned by the Chinese government in China to develop this capability with our own tax dollars. And it was pretty galling. And you know, we put up billboards, and I know we had Leo Girard was out there from the steel workers. And California ended up passing a law that made it harder to do that in the future. But the damage was already done. And so our politicians, sometimes they just don't learn. You know, that you're no. right. They see that low price, and they're like, we can make a deal here. But it doesn't turn out to be what they thought they bargained for.
Yeah, yeah, you get what you pay for. One more issue here, domestic mineral production. And I saw this posted on your website, Alliance for American Manufacturing. And it's scary. It's scary. You need to educate our listeners right now about this, because we're talking national defense in many cases, because it goes into sophisticated weapon systems. But beyond that, with technology, with electric vehicles and with wind and solar, apparently we get a lot of those, what they call precious minerals, precious rare earth minerals from China. Why can't we get them here? They're not here. Explain this to me, Scott.
Yeah, yeah, Flash, it's a good question, and it's one of those things that people don't give much thought to, because you pick up your phone and you call someone, you text someone, or you open an app, and you don't think about what goes inside of it. Same with your automobile, same with a lot of things, but there are things like platinum and cobalt and palladium and lots of other minerals that people may have seen on a chart in high school, but then they forgot about it. But they are vital in the creation of a lot of these circuits and a lot of these electronic components that go into everything from sophisticated weapon systems to smartphones, and as you said, a lot of renewable energy delivery systems as well. We do have stock of some of these minerals in some parts of the United States, but it got kind of expensive to mine it. And I'm going to say for good reason, because they were trying to, build in environmental protections for workers. And so China saw an opportunity here and domestically started to build up a rare earth mining capability, and also gobbled up assets in continents like Africa to do this as well. And they do not follow environmental protocols. They obviously don't pay nearly the attention to labor rights as they should. And so they've been able to take over the market in many ways. And so it's a national security threat. And so it's a capability that we want to have back here. We want to do it responsibly, and it may cost a little more. But we don't want to be dependent on China for a lot of these minerals. And so the administration has done an executive order. The House has passed a provision as part of the defense bill that goes through every year. We're waiting on the Senate and the conference to kind of do something with that. But we hope that we can get back up and running. And we want to do it again responsibly. We want to do it safely. And I know that, mining isn't all that in vogue these days, Flash, but this is something that if we do it right, is going to be very important for our economic future to rebuild this domestic capacity, which we lost a couple decades ago.
Yeah, it's really sad. I'm reading from the World Bank. They say that the demand is going to go up nearly 500% by 2050. That's 30 years away. 30 years away. Yeah. More than 3 billion tons of mineral metals will be needed, including minerals like copper and silver for energy storage. This is an accident waiting to happen here. I'm hoping that they could come up with something. But the question here, we have the deposits here in the United States. Is that accurate? Is that a pretty accurate assumption right now, Scott? And we don't have to go elsewhere in the world for it, or what? What do we know about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So for some minerals, we do have deposits of them. In fact, for many of the minerals, it has been what some companies consider to be cost prohibitive, because it's a little more expensive to mine here than it is in China, because we want to have safety protocols in place. So if you were to have either some sort of incentive to do it, it would help to offset that cost. But as you point out, minerals, there's a finite amount of them, on the earth that are accessible. And, we don't want to trade one dependency for another when we're transitioning to renewable energy sources. And, for decades, we've made all sorts of stupid decisions because of our dependence on oil from the Middle East. It's impacted, our war stance. It's impacted all sorts. It's impacted the environment. And so we don't want to make that same mistake as we're transitioning to wind, to solar, to electric vehicles. And so we should develop this domestic capability. We should do it right. And it will take some federal incentive to get companies engaged with it here. But it would also be a huge mistake to let China, we're in a great power competition. I'm not going to say China has any hostile motives towards the United States, but China does want to, have its own sphere of influence and does want to rival the United States. And so just depending on China for a supply of critical minerals would be foolish. It would be foolish for national security. It would be foolish for jobs and for the development of the supply chain. You just think about if we were in some dispute with China and China withheld those precious minerals, precious metals from our supply chains, it would completely shut down that aspect of production. It would be a huge mistake. And so I'm glad that there are some folks in Washington who are taking a look at this and who want to do something about it.
Yeah, scary scenario, real scary. It's hard to believe how quick this happened, too. We opened the door to China when we normalize relations, and look what we have created here. Wow. Scott, I'm going to leave it here on that note. Scott Paul of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, for a lot of the stories that we're talking about. You take care, my friend, and keep in touch and be safe, all right?
All right, Flash, all the best to you. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work.
All right, quick break. Greg LeRoy runs Good Jobs First, tracking corporate money, our money. That story next, right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A 500,000 strong, we're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And you can follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Area Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org. Let's go to line number two, and welcome back Greg LeRoy. Greg is with a great organization, been around for over 20 years, called Good Jobs First. And what they do is follow the money, our money, taxpayer money. Hey, Greg, welcome back. And thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Flash.
So you did some analyzing here, and you found out that a lot of our taxpayer money, we're talking about the CARES Act, which was passed overwhelmingly by the House and Senate, signed into law back in March. That's the legislation that provided everybody with like $1,200 stimulus,
right?
Unemployment compensation, which is badly needed today. I'm not going to get into that, but you you analyze who got some of that money. Talk to me about it, because you're calling them the corporate culprits. Is that right?
It's true. It's true. So, you know, long before the COVID, we created this website to track the money in the CARES Act. It's called the COVID Stimulus Watch. Long before that, we had another big database called Violation Tracker that captures all the sins of corporate America, essentially, all kinds of different regulatory and court fines and penalties. So we were interested to ask, like, so, okay, we're throwing a great deal of money to keep all these businesses afloat. And obviously, most of those are small businesses, and most of them really need it. And the issue isn't whether they need it or not, but like, what kind of companies are we subsidizing? And the truth is, we found 43,000 companies out of more than a million we looked at that have had major infractions of various kinds, you know, especially defrauding Uncle Sam, mostly healthcare companies defrauding Medicare and Medicaid programs, for example. And yet now they're getting a bailout from Uncle Sam again. You know, for-profit universities, and then small businesses doing things like wage theft and OSHA violations. But the big story here in terms of the big boys are the healthcare chains. They got huge amounts of money, despite histories of defrauding Medicare, Medicaid.
Now, did they have to give that money back because they were guilty of past crimes, or no?
We wish. No, there's nothing in the act about clawbacks or, you know, disqualification of companies based on their sordid histories. Part of the reason we did this, frankly, was to say that if there is going to be a HEROES Act, which is the successor bill that the House has passed and Mitch McConnell is sitting on, we hope that they would be a little more careful about that and talk about, you know, not just throwing money at everybody despite their histories.
Here's my question here, Greg. When a company is found guilty, I mean, like for an individual, let's start there.
Yeah.
If I commit a crime, if I rob a bank,
right,
I'm going to have that on my record, right?
Right.
I'm a convicted felon.
Right.
Now, in the corporate community, there's no indication of that when they ask for more government money?
We wish. I mean, we even pointed out that 70 of the cases we looked at involved companies that had actually had criminal charges as part of their regulatory penalties. And, you know, so there were felony allegations. And that's a big problem. We think, especially at that level where people are being accused of, where an organization is being accused of something that, as you point out, would make it very hard for a worker to get many kinds of jobs, right? They would be disqualified,
yeah,
by virtue of their felon status. Yet and still, these companies are eligible to get the same kind of aid that everybody else gets. So it doesn't make sense.
No. Again, we're talking 43,000 businesses as well as nonprofit organizations, and collectively paid out $13 billion to settle civil and criminal penalties over the last, what was it, a 10-year period that you checked?
Right, exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't give them all the details.
These are big companies, too. Now, some of them are in the Fortune 500 and Global 500 corporations. Is that right?
They are. So, for example, the three big healthcare violators are Sutter Health, Tenet Healthcare, and Walgreen Boots Alliance. Big penalty amounts, hundreds of millions of dollars. I mentioned University of Phoenix is one of the big for-profit universities. The airlines, the big airlines that had their own special bailout program, the payroll support program, many of them have multiple safety violations, some labor violations, environmental violations. So, yeah, we're talking about, and the majority of the money, the penalty money, was paid by the big companies because they have the biggest infractions.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Now, you mentioned the airlines. That's the money that ran out last week. Is that the same thing? That's what you're talking about, what you're trying to get going, because they've...
Program. And that's why suddenly the airlines were allowed to lay 28,000 people off in one fell swoop.
So what kind of reaction are you getting on this? You release this information. Does this go to Congress? Isn't there some kind of oversight, like the Government Accounting Office, that takes a look at this money, who's getting it, and why they should not get it?
Mm-hmm. There is actually a Congressional Oversight Committee chaired by Representative James Clyburn, the third-ranking Democrat in the House from South Carolina. And his committee actually has issued one study, which is a very aggregate set of findings about similar to our findings, but much less detailed, about companies that have laid people off or done other things, including using our violation tracker data. And they're very much attuned to this, frankly. We also have had many reporters, including one from Ohio who has not published yet, ask us to say, okay, give us the Ohio or Pennsylvania or New Jersey specific set of those data. Tell us about the companies among the 43,000 that are in our state that did this. And we've had numerous good articles already come out that way.
That's good. Now, they're trying to come up with some new stimulus. They're still far apart. The House passed legislation last week. It was over $2 trillion. The original legislation, you mentioned the HEROES Act, was over $3 trillion.
Right.
However, the conservatives say, no, it's still too much money. Because of your report from Good Jobs First, is that going to have any impact as to who gets the money? Do we know anything about that yet?
We certainly hope. I mean, we know that the Hill staffers are seeing this because they're on various listservs and email chains and conference calls. There's other two bodies too, right? There's the special five-person body created by the Act to oversee the Act, and I think it still doesn't have a chair, if memory serves, but it's been holding hearings, especially on the banking side of the equation, and the Federal Reserve bond purchase programs that have been happening. And then there's also something called the Pandemic Response Accountability Committee, which is a super committee of inspectors generals from various cabinet agencies. Those are kind of the cops, the government cops, so to speak, which also has oversight, but has been much less visible, for example, than the one during the Obama stimulus, which had the fantastic website recovery.gov that was so incredibly prominent and well-trafficked. Frankly, because Trump doesn't really own this stimulus and there isn't the same kind of branding, right? I mean, Obama, remember, assigned Biden to head the Recovery Act, right? And Biden had a big team, and there was a logo and a brand, and every website set up their own, I mean, every state and every governor set up their own Echo website to tout all the money that they were getting from Uncle Sam to help their state economies. None of that's happening this time. No, Trump does not own the CARES Act. I don't understand why, but he barely talks about it, and there's certainly no branding of it and no state websites, 51 state websites to echo the whole thing. So we felt the need to do this, to say, okay, we'll do our own version of it so everybody can see where the money's going in their state, and we're happy for that. And we hope that it will make things cleaner. We know that transparency and sunshine is the antiseptic here. It's always been true.
Always, yeah, yeah. Well, you're picking up where government dropped the ball, no question. Greg, I want to switch gears here a little bit. You are responsible for calling attention to General Motors, and this was a big story when GM decided to pull out of Lordstown, Ohio. This was, my gosh, I think 2 years ago now.
Right.
And they got a lot of tax money. A whole lot of tax. I want to say it was like $60 million, and they made a promise to the state of Ohio that they were going to stay in operation. I believe it was till 2030. Well, they missed it by 10 years, or 12 years, actually.
No.
I don't know if you're privy to this, but apparently, because of what you called out, Ohio got a little tough here. I know their attorney general said, you know what, we want some of that money back. And they just announced, this was actually about 2 weeks ago, they ordered General Motors to repay $28 million in state tax credits. How about
they
that?
They did. We've been following this case very closely. And they also agreed, the company agreed to reinvest $12 million in the Youngstown, Mahoning Valley community in various ways to boost the economy. So 40 out of the $60 million is going to be given back. Yeah, we've been following this very closely. To our knowledge, that's the biggest single so-called clawback repayment that any company has ever made in U.S. history, actually. And, you know, we wish they'd taken all 60 of it, but it's still a very significant event, especially given that you had a Republican governor and attorney general doing this. And they were penalizing a big employer that still has a lot of employees in the state and is putting battery jobs back into the Lordstown plant. So it's obviously a very politically complicated situation for the administration. But yet and still, it's a very significant event. And look, you know, we think it's a good thing. And we think these deals should never be structured in ways that puts taxpayers' monies at risk. The other detail I just want to tell you about, that money, that $60 million, was not a tax break for General Motors. The money came from the workers. The two programs that generated that $60 million for General Motors were the workers' state personal income taxes that were diverted, that did not go to Columbus, that instead stayed in GM's pocket. It was not their money. And that's why I was really adamant that they had to give it back, because it wasn't GM's money to begin with.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Yeah,
and at first GM said, oh, no, we can't do anything. Times are tough, and they blame the pandemic, you know.
Right.
I mean, come on.
But I read the paperwork. The paperwork was laughable. They said, you know, well, suddenly the market was flipped from sedans to SUVs, and this plant makes sedans, and so, you know, we're just not enough of a market yet. And then they put the chart in the thing about, you know, the market share of SUVs versus sedans, and those lines crossed like a decade and a half ago, right? We know SUVs have been much more popular, especially because gasoline's been so cheap. And obviously, that's where the big profits are, because SUVs are much more expensive and higher markup. And they're saying, well, we just didn't put SUVs in Lordstown, is what they were saying. Oops, you know, and of course, what's going to happen when you do that? When you put the declining market share product in a plant, what's going to happen? Duh.
Exactly. You know, the crazy thing, they were making money on the Chevy Cruze. They were making money. They just weren't making enough money. And that came out in a couple of reports. It's like, you got to make a bunch of money in order to stay in operation, whether it's the state of Ohio or Pennsylvania or anywhere in America. Other than that, they'll move the jobs to China or Vietnam or Korea. That's pretty much how it goes. Well, Greg, it's always a pleasure having you on the broadcast. I'll tell you, follow the money, and you got to check this story on the website. If you go to goodjobsfirst.org, our tax money going to companies that are charged and in some cases convicted of felonies for stealing workers' wages and health care violations. Oh, my God. It just goes on and on and on. Well, you take care. Be safe and keep in touch with us here on America's Workforce. All right.
Great to be with you, Flash. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees and the Ohio AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.